Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we will go to Hawaii and talk with Hawaii's leading physician, nutritionist, and lifestyle medicine expert, Dr. Terry Shintani, MD. Because of Dr. Shintani's service to humanity in Hawaii, he has been designated as a living treasure of Hawaii. Dr. Shintani has received national recognition for his creation of the Hawaii Diet Program, a unique diet and lifestyle program that has helped Native Hawaiians to better health and wellness. The concepts of the Hawaii Diet Program can also help you to improve your health and longevity. But before we get into today's exciting topic, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, you can walk your way to a longer life, a new study says. Physical activity after age 40 can increase life expectancy by up to 7 years, researchers find. A new study by researchers at the United States National Cancer Institute found that staying physically active after age 40 seems to increase your lifespan between 2 and 7 years. And the more you exercise, the longer your life expectancy, regardless of your weight. There is a dose-response relationship between physical activity and life expectancy, and if you don't currently do any physical activity, doing just a few minutes of physical activity a day can result in a notable increase in life expectancy. Exercise may extend life by helping to prevent often fatal diseases. Other studies have linked physical activity to a lower risk of heart disease and several cancers. Well, the bottom line, according to the published research, is that some physical activity is good and more is better. For the study published in the journal PLOS Medicine, National Cancer Institute researchers pooled data from 6 previously published studies that included more than 650,000 people. Using this data, the researchers were able to calculate the years of life gained after age 40 from various levels of physical activity. The researchers found that a small increase in physical activity, such as a brisk walk for about 75 minutes a week, added 1.8 years of life. That's a 19% decrease in the risk of dying compared with not doing any exercise, the researchers said. For those who walked 150 to 299 minutes a week, which is the amount of physical activity recommended by the U.S. government, the gain in life expectancy was 3.4 years, the study authors found. More vigorous activity, such as walking up to 450 minutes a week, added 4.5 years of life. Gains in lifespan were seen for all people, whether they were normal weight, overweight, or obese, the researchers added. The biggest increase in life expectancy was 7.2 years for those of normal weight and who exercised at levels recommended by the U.S. government compared to an obese person who didn't exercise, the study found. Dr. David Katz, director of Yale University's Prevention Research Center, called the new research a study of profound importance with a message both compelling and clear. Exercise can add years to your life. Well, here's another study that shows that healthy habits in our 40s pays off in the 70s. Healthy living in middle age can add more than a decade of heart attack-free living to old age, researchers found. The overall lifetime risk of total cardiovascular disease from ages 45 to 95 was 60% for men and 55% for women, according to John T. Wilkins, MD, of Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago. But those with optimal risk factor profiles at age 45 lived about 14 years longer free of total cardiovascular disease compared with those with at least 2 major risk factors in middle age, they reported in the Journal of the American Medical Association. Staying active in middle age and meeting standards to keep risk factors low significantly improved event-free survival, according to the researchers. Having one or more risk factors shorten one's estimated lifespan. At ages 45, 55, and 65, those with one or at least two major risk factors could expect to have half their chances of event-free survival. Maintenance of optimal risk factors through ages 45, 55, and 65 years may not guarantee a life free of total cardiovascular disease, but it increases the probability that more years will be lived free of cardiovascular disease, according to the authors. We'll be back right after this short break.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word. healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
And the question for today is that I heard that keeping a food diary can actually help you lose weight. Any suggestions on how to keep a food diary? Well, keeping track of all the foods that you eat in a day can help you lose weight and keep it off, according to the Cleveland Clinic and other research centers. The Cleveland Clinic offers these suggestions for starting a food diary. 1. Use a notebook, computer, or other electronic device to keep a diary. 2. Write down what you eat and drink as you consume them each time, as well as the date and time. Be specific as you can. 3. Designate columns for when you ate, what you ate, how you felt, and how much exercise you got that day. And 4. Review your journal and analyze your eating habits. Look for scenarios such as eating out at restaurants or emotions that trigger unhealthy choices. So if you want to lose weight or just want to have better awareness of the foods that you eat throughout the day, keep a food diary.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
On today's program, we are going to Hawaii to talk with our featured guest, Dr. Terry Shintani, MD. Dr. Terry Shintani received his master's degree in nutrition at Harvard University and his medical degree and law degree at the University of Hawaii. He is board certified in preventive medicine and is a professor at the University of Hawaii School of Medicine and is on the National Advisory Board of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. Dr. Shintani is the author of 10 books, including The Eat More, Weigh Less Diet, The Hawaii Diet, and The Good Carbohydrate Revolution. He has been featured in Newsweek on CNN, CBS, ABC, NBC, and the Encyclopedia Britannica. For his service to humanity, Dr. Shintani formally was designated as a living treasure of Hawaii. And Dr. Shintani and I, by the way, have been friends for many years. We've co-hosted a weekly talk radio show over there in Honolulu called Nutrition and You when I live back in Hawaii. So we've been longtime friends and colleagues. And now from Honolulu, Hawaii, we welcome Dr. Terry Shintani. Dr. Shintani, aloha, and thank you for being on the show today.
Yeah, aloha to you and all the listeners, and it's great to be on the radio with you again.
It sure is, Dr. Shintani, and you know, I think a lot of people would find it kind of interesting to get a little idea about your background as a medical doctor and a physician, as well as having a degree in nutrition. How did all that come about? Because most doctors really don't go back to get a degree in nutrition.
Right, and it's a very good question, because as you know, I was a lawyer first.
Yes.
And people ask me, how did I get from law all the way into medicine and nutrition? And the way it went was this. When I was in law school, I was kind of struggling, and long story short, a friend of mine said, hey, why don't you change your diet and eat good, healthy, unprocessed food? So I did. I went 100% into a unprocessed, plant-based diet. And suddenly everything changed. I started to lose weight automatically. My energy level came up. My brain cleared up. And I suddenly became a very good student. I made law review, and I realized I was much more interested in the health effects of nutrition, because no doctor, no nutritionist, no health professional ever told me that it could change my life that way. Not just, you know, cholesterol and blood pressure and whatever, weight loss. I felt so much better, and I could think more clearly, and I had more energy to do the things that I wanted to do. So I set out to become a medical doctor, and I quickly got disappointed in medicine because I went into medicine to learn how to heal people. I mean, don't you think doctors ought to do that, right?
That's right.
Yeah. But by fourth year, I realized that when I would see a patient and the doctor, my preceptor, that's what they called our teachers when we were one-on-one with a patient, we would recommend these medications to the patient. And the patient would ask, well, doc, when will the medicines cure me? And time after time, we'd say, well, never. You know, you have to take them for the rest of your life. And then I began to realize that I didn't learn how to heal these people at all. I didn't learn what I came to medical school to learn. And realizing that most of these diseases, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, heart disease, diabetes, and so on, you know, muscle aches and joint pains, and you could go on, were all nutrition and lifestyle-related diseases. And if you looked at the statistics, over two-thirds of us died of nutrition-related diseases. It just seemed odd or inadequate that they didn't teach us enough nutrition, because that was at the root of these diseases. And if you don't get at the root cause of disease, I don't see how you can hope to cure them. So I went to Harvard to get a nutrition degree after medical school because I thought I wasn't adequately trained.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I, you know, took that long path to becoming a medical doctor after being a lawyer and then becoming a nutritionist.
Well, when you went to Harvard, of course, you studied under some great individuals.
Oh,
maybe share with us some of that.
Yeah, I had absolutely the best teachers there, including the great Walter Willett, who was who wasn't chief of nutrition then, but he is now. And he's one of the most prolific. I understand he's got over 1,000 peer-reviewed articles on nutrition published. And, you know, having even 100 is considered prolific, and he's 10 times that. And and then in the course of my work, I also got to meet Dr. T. Colin Campbell of Cornell, and he got me to be a visiting lecturer at Cornell University.
Great.
So I've had some of the best, and one of my teachers was Dr. William Castelli, the great principal investigator of the legendary Framingham study. So I've had nothing but the best teachers in the field.
So with your degree in medicine from the University of Hawaii and now your Harvard Master's in Public Health and Nutrition, wasn't that what it was?
Yeah, it's Master's in Nutrition in the School of Public Health.
The School of Public Health. Here you come back to Hawaii, and of course, Hawaii is your home. And,
right.
I was fortunate to make it my home for 15 years myself.
Right.
But I know you developed a passion for the native Hawaiian people and actually started working with them in the area of nutrition. Tell us a little bit about that great work you did there with the Hawaiians.
Well, as you know, I'm a spiritual person. And
yes.
I would ask for spiritual guidance. What should I do with all of this great education? And the message I got was to help the people who needed it the most. And that was the native Hawaiian community. They had the worst obesity, the highest rate of death from diabetes, hypertension, strokes, cancer, heart disease, and so forth. And I worked at a community health center. I started my work at this community health center where we had the largest number of Native Hawaiians. We had a community of 40,000 people, and over half of them were Native Hawaiian. And we had the worst of just about everything, the worst obesity, the worst, you know, they had teen pregnancy and substance abuse and spouse abuse and, you know, all of those psychosocial issues along with chronic disease. And I used to have patients that were 300, 400, 500, 600, 700 pounds. And I did a lecture in Japan, and I said my biggest patient was 400 kilos. And they said, don't you mean pounds? And I said, no, he was 890 pounds. That's 400 kilos.
Right.
And so I thought that if I could figure out, you know, I wanted to do something with the whole community and help the Native Hawaiians be proud of their own heritage. And when I look back, it was really interesting because a lot of people said that, well, obesity is genetic. Mm-hmm. And, of course, most people cannot reach 600 pounds, 700 pounds, even if they tried, because they don't have the genetic ability. So they said, well, this must be genetic. But if you look back at Native Hawaiians back when Captain Cook first arrived in the island, you know, the genes were pure, so if it was genetic, they should have been obese, or even more obese then, because all the, you know, the genes were pure.
Right.
But when you look at old pictures, they were all slim and athletic looking. And so I reasoned that if I could figure out why they stayed slim and healthy in those days and now become very obese, I could figure out the obesity problem for anybody, because if you can deal with it for the people who are most likely to be obese, then it would be easy to deal with it for people who are less likely to be obese. So when I looked at their diet back in those days, the interesting thing was they ate a very high carbohydrate diet, completely opposite of what people were saying, that high-carb diets make you fat. And the factor I think that most people were missing was the fact that if you ate taro or poi, which is the form where they ate it in Hawaii. Poi is like a pudding-like food that's made up of mashed taro.
Right.
It would take about 8 pounds of poi to provide a day's worth of calories. And so even if it's high carb, there's no way to get enough of that food to make you gain weight. And so I did a project where I fed Native Hawaiians as much food as they wanted, based on the ancient Hawaiian diet. And we published a study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. They lost an average of 17 pounds in 3 weeks, eating as much as they wanted, but eating traditional unprocessed Hawaiian food. And so then I said, well, we could probably use this concept and use it with any food. So then I conducted a program called the Hawaii Diet, instead of the Hawaiian diet. You understand the difference. Hawaii diet is made up of the multicultural nature of Hawaii, and we would have, you know, all kinds of different food, not just Hawaiian food, but, you know, local American food and Chinese food and Japanese food and Italian food and Portuguese food and so forth, Portuguese bean soup and pasta and all of those things. And it was a delicious variety of foods. I put people on that same program. I included the governor of Hawaii in that program. And we got the same result, essentially. People lost weight without counting calories. Cholesterol was improved. Blood pressure improved. Diabetes improved to a point where I could get people off insulin. And it worked wonderfully. So then I took that. And now what I do is a 10-day program where people who have health problems engage in the program. I teach them how to cook. I teach, you know, we feed them most of their meals, but we don't cook them all so that they learn how to do it at home. And I routinely get people off their medications for diabetes, hypertension. We've dropped cholesterol levels 40, 50 points in 10 days. They say that can't be done, but we do it routinely.
So what we see is that the Native Hawaiian people eat the modern Hawaiian diet, which is unhealthy, and you've put them back on their ancient traditional Hawaiian diet, and they improve their health.
Right.
And you converted that more healthy type of diet so that everyone of all ethnic groups can eat similar types of foods.
Right, exactly. You can use our same concept. I have a table in my book called the Shintani Mass Index, where you can look at the mass versus the calories of food, and you can tell which food are going to help you lose weight, and it'll help you do it automatically.
Right.
And just for example, apples. It takes about 9 pounds of apples for a day's worth of calories.
Right.
Well, it's obvious, even though apples are not only carbohydrate, they're mostly simple carbs, as you know, and you still can't get fat eating that food simply because the mass of the food is too great for you to consume enough calories to gain weight. And so I catalog foods on that basis in my books, the Eat More, Weigh Less cookbook and the Hawaii Diet cookbooks are on lulu.com if people want to see that. But we get people to follow their diet with all kinds of food, but based on the kind of food that will help them fill their stomach up before they get too many calories. And it's the same way that Native Hawaiians who have this high propensity to get overweight, how they stayed slim for centuries.
So your Eat More, Weigh Less diet came also out, and it's just hard for people to see that. You can actually eat more and weigh less.
Right.
Maybe elaborate a little bit more on that.
Well, let me just give you, we published a study in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition showing that people, if they are allowed to eat as much as they want, if they pick food carefully, the calories won't add up to a weight gain diet. We are talking about eating more food, less calories, but more food, if you understand the difference.
Yes.
So I chose the example of potatoes for a good reason, because, you see, potatoes are, you know, a high-carb food. People think it's going to make you gain weight easily. However, it takes about 6 pounds of potatoes for a day's worth of calories. You're not going to eat that much in a day. And so it's very difficult, if not impossible, to gain weight eating potatoes. However, if you turn them into potato chips, a processed food with all that oil in it, it becomes 1 pound for 2,500 calories. And then you can easily eat a 16-ounce bag of chips over the course of a day. And then you'll still be hungry and eat maybe a burger and then wash it down with a soft drink. And then you've easily exceeded your day's worth of calories, and you have easily enough calories to gain a lot of weight on that basis, especially if you do it day after day.
Dr. Shintani, you received some national award for your work. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we did the Native Hawaiian diet program. We worked with a population that had the highest rates of obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and so forth. And we got such good results. And because it was in a poverty community, the local Department of Health took notice of our project and submitted us for an award. And we got a state award. And the state awards get sent to national to be evaluated for a national award. And we were, I think, one of 5 projects chosen. I think it was 1992, and we were recognized by the U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Donna Shalala, at the time, for our work. It was a Excellence in Community Health Award, something, I can't remember the exact name, but it was quite an honor for us. And the interesting thing was we presented at Lister Hall at NIH our results. In the conflict of interest part at the end, you have to declare where your funding came from. And we were a community-based project. We had no funding. And so I said at the end that we were an unfunded project. And you could almost hear the audience gasp, because all the other projects that won awards that year were quite well-funded, you know, 6-7-figure projects. So it was really quite an honor. And for me, I follow spiritual guidance. I think it's a tribute to the guidance of the Almighty that allowed us to have that kind of success.
Well, congratulations on that award and your life work. And I know that you really believe diet and lifestyle, and you practice lifestyle medicine. That's what you're doing.
Right, yeah. And it's tough because the insurance companies don't pay for what I do. So it's a struggle because I try to get people off their medication rather than put them on more medication.
Well, as I don't know if you're aware of this, but they're going to try to start a lifestyle medicine movement through the American College of Lifestyle Medicine this year, and hopefully we can make some changes.
Right, I hope so.
Well, Dr. Shintani, for people that really want to know more about you and your work and your books, where should they go?
Well, probably the easiest place, because this is a national or international broadcast,
yeah,
they can go to lulu.com. That's L-U-L-U.com. And I have two of my books that they can order from that website. Just look up Shintani, S-H-I-N-T-A-N-I. And the two books are the Eat More, Weigh Less cookbook and the Hawaii Diet cookbook. And I put those lulu.com because those are two of the easiest books to follow. So
okay.
People can get a lot of information out of those books, and it's full of recipes that should satisfy any taste.
Well, Dr. Terry Shintani, thank you for being with us today on Health and Longevity, and I wish you our warmest aloha here from California.
Right, thank you. And once again, in case it wasn't clear, it's lulu.com is where the books are available. I want to thank you, Dr. Westerdahl, for all of your great work over the years.
Thank you. If you would like to see my video presentation on the healthy traditional Hawaiian diet versus the unhealthy modern Hawaii diet describing Dr. Shintani's research, go to the video resource page on our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. This is a 30-minute lecture I presented at the American Dietetic Association conference in Honolulu, Hawaii. Also on the website, you can learn more about Dr. Shintani's book, The Hawaii Diet. Once again, go to www.healthandlongevityradio.com.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for this week's program. You can listen to all our program podcasts on our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. Until next week, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.